following audio was recorded in a public school history classroom. Topic of discussion is Iran. Students are working on a project where they have to decide how to intervene with Iran's apparent nuclear weapons program.
So, tactical nuclear strikes, meaning smaller weapons, would have been very effective 8 to 10 years ago. Right now, I think the U.S. is the only ones that can do it now. We're the only ones with bombs big enough to potentially penetrate to these underground caverns, or at least, if we know where the entrances are, have to destroy something that's a half mile underground. If you destroy all the entrances and exits to it, you effectively do the same thing. How hard is it to blow up a couple of some unknown actors? Yeah, some unknown actors. We believe it was either the Israeli Mossad or the CIA blew up a couple of power pylons about 6 months ago in Iran as like a see what we can do really easily demonstration. The Iranians did something really stupid too. They had the Fordo site. They had all the power, the electricity going to it on above ground wires. You know, like high-tension power cables? They had wires going to the place. Isn't that kind of stupid?
At this point, the first student speaks out. Now, I've taken the audio of most of the students out of this because they are private citizens. In other words, they are not being paid taxpayer money to participate in this discussion. So the first student who speaks is the spokesman from one of the groups that have been tasked with coming up with a solution to the problem of Iran. The group's suggestion is super powerful spies.
Super powerful spies? That is a potential. Okay. Oh, we got another group. Yes, let's hear what you guys have. Guys, let's listen to what this group has to say.
The next group's suggestion is to surround Iran with countries who think. Countries who think, like the United States of America, who would feel threatened by Iran. In other words, surround Iran with American and Israeli allies.
Basically, surround Iran with people who think like us, who would feel potentially threatened. Good idea. We've done that. The countries that feel threatened by Iran are Israel, United States, Kuwait, Bahrain, United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Jordan. These are the major ones. And basically a lot of the places along the former Southern Soviet Union. Feel directly threatened by Iran. The odd, amazing thing was even Israel, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia, who normally don't talk to each other, all actually had a number of secret contacts and were working together to confront a common enemy, Iran. And all these countries, unfortunately, look to the United States to take the lead. We'll help you. We'll actually supply military bases. We will supply refueling facilities. We will supply coastlines for you guys to infiltrate. We're with you, United States. Take the lead. Well, under the later years of Bush and all of the Obama years, these countries have been waiting for the United States to do something. And in the past year or so, most of them said, forget about it. We'll deal with it ourselves. Yeah.
The next group's spokesperson suggests continuing covert operations, like sending them computer viruses.
Yeah, we've been doing that. Israel's been doing that. We think Britain and France have also been doing that. Keep up the pressure on Iran. Do what kind of damage you can. Try and force them, convince them to change their ways. Nobody else is going to do it. And, you know, Nick and Ethan are beating each other up. I'm not going to tell all you girls, okay, all you girls get together and break up that fight because it's closer to you, they're closer to your age. No, I'm going to do it because it needs to be done. Yes.
The next group spokesperson is my guest today.
They might not have nuclear weapons. So why should we even get involved? Like, I think we should be non-interventionists.
Okay, well, that was one of the rules. You can't do nothing. And the reason you can't do nothing The reason you can't do nothing is because the larger body of evidence says everything they have done is far beyond what is needed for their... You're not listening. You're already ready to come back to me.
What?
Just listen. Everything they have done so far evidence, proven fact, is far beyond anything a country would need to create nuclear power, energy, without nuclear weapons. They have gone far beyond that. The IAEA has constantly said, let us into these sites to prove that you are not producing weapons, and Iran has constantly said no.
But we're the only country in the world that's ever used nuclear weapons.
That's irrelevant.
It's not.
Sure it is.
Like, I'm not going to lie and say we should do something if that's
okay. Good. But part of the rules for this, because we're working...
I'm sorry. Please come to the office.
Who?
I want to start today's show with a quick disclaimer. I was very supportive of this student, Sam, who has tried to record herself standing up to some of the messages that these kids are exposed to in these schools. Sam is an adult. She is 18 years old. She is a senior in high school. She can certainly make her own decisions. I wanted to do this show so she would know that, you know, considering she probably feels pretty isolated every day where she is, there's a lot of people out there who are on her side. Also, there was more to our discussion than what you're going to hear today. Before we started recording, we talked about this for about 20 minutes, going over some of the risks associated with what she is doing. And I just want to make sure that it doesn't sound like I'm egging her on to do something that could possibly land her in trouble. She is fully aware of the risks. And this video has actually been mirrored in other places, which allowed her to take it off her channel. I will also not use her whole name. I will not tell you where she goes to school. So hopefully she can continue to stand up and speak out in a way that protects her anonymity as much as possible on the internet. I don't know if that's one of her long-term goals. It was certainly something that I discussed with her, the pros and the cons of doing this. That being said, it's always very encouraging to hear from somebody like we did in the last show with Andrew from Teen Take, who is starting to process all of this stuff and turn it around and make the best effort they can at the time to communicate it to other people. And hopefully, you know, it shows like this, Adam versus the Man, who both of these guests credit as, you know, a significant influence that can be there to offer guidance and support through the learning process. God knows, I've made plenty of mistakes myself. So here is our discussion. This is Sam from the YouTube channel Liberty Queen. Thank you for listening and take care. Everybody Hey, everybody. This is Brett. Welcome back to the show. My guest today is Sam, and we're just going to leave it at Sam for right now. She is a high school senior somewhere in the United States. You're 18, right, Sam?
Yep.
Sam has a YouTube channel called Liberty Queen. And Sam, you have, I guess, over the course of the last couple of years, been waking up to the ideas of liberty or realizing them for the first time since you've been stuck in government school for the last 12 years almost. I wanted to ask you a little bit, first of all, about how that process happened for you and what's it like to be in school realizing these ideas. I would imagine that would be incredibly frustrating. But first, how did this stuff come to your attention?
It sounds pretty typical, but it all started with watching Ron Paul YouTube videos.
Right.
Because the stuff that he was saying was so different. I've never heard it before. And I've always been kind of interested in what's been going on in the world. I mean, I guess I was a liberal thinker in my past life before I woke up to everything. But it really started when I was in my government class, and I felt like we were never really covering anything that seemed to be related to the real issues that were going on. Because I feel like, myself included, before, mm-hmm. there was always kind of, people know that there's something wrong. There's something wrong. But they don't know exactly what it is. And they don't put forth the effort to try and do their own research on things. So halfway through my government class last year, I got really into Ron Paul. Really, really into Ron Paul, to the point where I would make PowerPoint presentations and add him in there, even if it was kind of unrelated to the project. And when I went from Ron Paul to looking at other media sources like InfoWars, yeah, and Adam Kokesh, Adam vs. the Man, and Prison Planet, and from there branched my curiosity for I started watching like short documentaries and stuff. It just takes a little bit of effort.
Well, it's a great day for me, definitely an interesting day for me to have you on, because I think this is really terrific to be able to speak to somebody who, despite their surroundings, is able to start understanding this stuff. Right before we started talking today, I was on the phone with Tom Woods doing an interview, and Tom Woods is a historian and an economist. He wrote The Politically Incorrect Guide to American History and 33 questions about American history that you're not supposed to ask. It sounds like, from the YouTube videos that I've seen, some of which take place in your school, you are also doing some experiments in that building with questions that you are not supposed to ask. And for you, you said that started last year with your American government class, which is one of the worst classes.
Oh, yeah.
I remember I watched a couple interviews you had done, and you said it was a question of third parties, voting for third parties.
Yes. I think that's what caught my interest when I heard about Ron Paul, and I just liked a couple of things he said. I was interested in the libertarian views, mm-hmm, and I think my curiosity was triggered when my teacher said that voting for third parties is wasted votes. And it wasn't just that teacher. It was different teachers that I've had, because I ask my teachers questions about what they think about things and who they're voting for. And even though that's kind of a personal question, a lot of them really don't have any problem answering me. But they tell me, I say, don't you know the alternatives, the third party alternatives? And they don't even know. But their response is immediately, most of them, that voting third parties are wasted votes. And I think that really woke me up, because I was really shocked that they would say that. And when they say that to the class hears it and the class thinks that's true.
Yeah.
That's the sad part, because then they continue the two-party, the left-right paradigm, and think that's the only way, when it really it's not, and it's the problem.
You know, I remember when these ideas had just started to come together for me and solidify around 2007. So this was the prior Ron Paul campaign for president. I think you're talking about the one for the 2012 election. But for, yeah, me, really, in 2007, and I remember thinking, gosh, after 8 years of George Bush, this guy still has to call himself a Republican in order to be taken seriously by the mainstream. And I thought that was really, really sad. I thought that would be a label that people would want to distance themselves from. And I mean, this was, you know, 5 years, 6 years ago, and I was still incredibly naive about this guy could get into this system. It was the last time that I really believed that there was a solution to the problems that exist in the world that could come through the channels that we're always told we should go through. Get involved in politics, be a voter, support a candidate, write a letter to your congressman. It's like saying, get on this treadmill and imagine where you want to go, you know?
Yes, that's a great analogy. And those are things that school encourages you to do. And it's not necessarily, I don't think the teachers are being malicious. I think it's just because that's what they've been taught. That's what they've been indoctrinated to do. So they indoctrinate their students. And unknowingly, it's dangerous. And it's scary, because I sit through these classes and I'm thinking to myself that I'm witnessing indoctrination. And I can recognize it too, because when we get in group projects to solve terrorism problems, I want to roll my eyes, and I don't mean to be a jerk about anything. It's just, it's disappointing to me, because I can see it. I can see what's going on.
Once you come to understand the non-aggression principle, I would think that it would be incredibly frustrating to sit there and listen to a teacher talk about how war is good, how bombing people is just and even like noble and necessary. I would think, you know, from what I've heard, the video that you put out that my audience will also hear, I think it actually required quite a bit of restraint after listening to Ron Paul and being exposed to these other media sources like Adam Kokesh.
That's exactly what happens in my classroom every day, only a different subject, and I have a hard time restraining myself because the rest of the class doesn't understand. I think they think the whole non-aggression principle is just like a fairy, like a dream, something that's unrealistic. But I think our foreign policy is unrealistic, and those are things that don't get discussed. And then you have to think to yourself, you think, well, why isn't that being discussed? Why aren't the realistic problems that are happening being discussed in school? I've never learned anything about the Federal Reserve, or they've never really told us to read the Constitution or anything like that. Yeah, we've mentioned it a couple times, but it's never come down to facing any important problems that need to be solved. We aren't even talking about any of the major problems that are happening right now. And that's what's making me, I'm even more shocked now. I'm more shocked that none of it has been mentioned. The debt crisis, the NDAA, the Patriot Act, the Federal Reserve, none of this has been mentioned in school. Nothing. And it seems like it's a bigger problem than trying to find a solution for Iran's possible nuclear weapons. It's like the whole Iraq thing, which was total propaganda. And then my teacher tells my class that the United States doesn't have propaganda. He said that to my class today.
I am speechless.
Yeah.
I'm speechless on a podcast, which you're not supposed to be, but that amazes me. And it's funny because, like, of course, the people who want a war with Iran, and there's a variety of interests from, you know, foreign policy think tanks to intellectuals to corporations that are all real into this idea of a military campaign in Iran. They must not feel like they have to work very hard at that, considering they sold the war on terror to people, you know, post 9/11. And I mean, you were, you know, 7, 8, 9 years old when that happened, but it was basically like they live in caves and we have this free and capricious lifestyle. And because of that, they want to make bombs and kill us. It was like the plot of that cartoon where the bird, the coyote chases the bird. It was that complex as a Looney Tunes cartoon for explaining the war on terror, and everybody bought it immediately. Because it was sold at the perfect time, just like this gun debate is happening right now at the perfect time where everyone is fearful, everyone is confused. And when you pull people, I'm sure you're realizing this from the conversations that you've had, when you pull people into this emotional realm, it's very, very uncomfortable, but it's also very, very effective for the propagandists because they know that people will believe anything they're told when they're afraid and confused.
Yeah, and I think, and here's the thing, I don't think that everyone's necessarily a sheep. I think that they just don't do their own research. They just accept what they hear because they don't find a reason to do their own research, because we're told in schools, we're taught in schools that this is what's happening. And I think they think that their time for learning is in school, and then when they get home, you know, they go play Call of Duty or whatever. And I mean, that's a propaganda tool in its own, but I'm not going to get into that.
Sure. You're right,
I mean,
though.
Just think about the audience that it targets, you know?
Yeah. I'm really interested in the interactions that you've had with this teacher, this history teacher that you have, who's pushing this idea of war with Iran and basically boxed you in to a project where you have to decide on some kind of aggressive military intervention,
yeah,
and nothing else is an option.
Yeah, did you hear him say that that's the, you can't do nothing. That is the only, you have to come up with something, because every bit of evidence points to them definitely having nuclear weapons.
He said it in a way, and this is, it's really interesting how people try to find these workarounds for like really making arguments. He said something in the video that sounded very authoritative and declarative, like all the credible sources or something, which is very vague, right? So he just says
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
they do this in the mainstream media all the time, right? Where they say, experts say, and then they can just say whatever they want.
Every time I say something that's slightly, where my opinion is slightly different than everyone else's, with my opinions that contradict his statements, he responds to me in such a weird way where you can tell by his body language, he rolls his eyes slightly. He looks the other way. He'll take like 10 seconds longer to respond to me because he just puts that oomph in his body language to make it seem like I just sounded stupid with my comment. And I'm surprised. Even kids in the class are offended that I say things that are contradicting what he says, even if they don't realize it, which is something else I noticed. They might not necessarily agree or disagree with you, but they just automatically dismiss and disregard and even kind of sneer at things that they don't really hear much about.
Yeah, that kind of answers my next question, actually, is I wanted to know how peers are reacting to you. Do you have anybody on your side when these things happen in class?
I have a couple friends who listen to the things I say, but I don't think they don't get into it the way I do. You know, they don't go and read independent news sources or watch all the YouTube videos or the documentaries. I think that they have an idea, and I think they're open about it. But it's like what I said in one of my YouTube videos, people aren't getting it.
Yeah. You know, I would think about it like this. Like, even this teacher and all your peers and almost everybody in that school, well, you know, teachers is kind of a gray area for this, but most people are awake to these ideas, the real principles of liberty, in their private lives, meaning that when they have problems or when they have goals, they don't aggress against other people. Like, none of your peers are rolling hand grenades into the line of Dunkin' Donuts if it's too long to solve that problem, right? But suddenly, when we go into this other realm of the political, of the foreign policy, of how should things work economically, suddenly violence is back on the table. So we have all these talks today, and Adam actually did a really good job, I thought, with some of these people in Washington, D.C. on the whole gun control debate, where these people, they talk about being anti-gun. You couldn't
be... Oh, I saw that. There's moms...
Yeah. The point that I want to make as far as like separating the private from the political is that in their private lives, yes, they're terrified of guns. They don't want to be around guns. But in the political, the entire system they support is made possible by the fact that some people have these guns and can use them. If you don't want to pay your taxes, if you don't want to put children into debt, if you don't support U.S. foreign policy, if you want to smoke marijuana and then not go with the police when they bring you to jail, that world, that political world of Republicans and Democrats entirely depends on guns. So when you can approach this subject with peers and say, look, these ideas that I'm talking about, the philosophy of liberty, property rights, self-ownership, the non-aggression principle, you already embrace all of these things in your private life because you're not a violent psychopath. So all I'm asking is that you apply it consistently, that you have the same standards that you have for me and your teenage friends, for the people who are, you know, the leaders of the country. Hold them to the same high standard that you hold teenagers.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I don't think that they are necessarily doing it to be mean or evil. I think that they're just misguided. I don't think they have bad intentions when they say that they're anti-gun. I think that they're just misguided and taught to think a certain way.
Oh, absolutely, yes. And I think that that's one of the real important things that I've tried to push on my show over the course of last year, is having some empathy and some understanding for these people, because politics seems to be this arena that people go into to vent all of this anger and hostility and hatred. And what it's really lacking is any kind of humanity and compassion. You seem to have a certain amount of compassion and understanding for the fact that, you know, these people, it's not their fault. What else? Where else could they be philosophically? Because what else have they been exposed to? It means you've been lied to your entire life, right?
Yes, that's what I was saying earlier. People get defensive not because you're saying anything that's offensive. I mean, I don't think that the things that, I don't think talking about the basic principles of liberty is offensive, but I think it's offensive to them because when you say these things and they've never really heard them before, I think that it's basically like telling them that their life is a lie. And I mean, in a nutshell, I wouldn't come out and say that, and I don't actually necessarily think that to a certain extent, but I mean, that's kind of what it is. And so their first initial reaction is to get defensive. I mean, they've never heard it before, and that's sad, which means that we've never been taught the basic principles of liberty in school before. So I think if they did, I think we would develop our own opinions and not just the opinions of what our teachers tell us in class, like my teacher in my YouTube video.
When you talk about being so aware of this propaganda that's happening in school, like on specific issues and never being taught the principles of liberty, one of my own criticisms about my show personally is that, you know, it's kind of a lot of the times it's had a very negative tone because it's a real process to point out to people how this is, you know, a war on all fronts and how deep the hole we're in is. So I have to keep bringing up these stories and bringing up these examples of all these things that are done to us. But it's not just about, a few things that you're told here and there about government. It's this continuous process. School is this environment which is so anti-freedom. It's so anti-self-reliance. And it begins in the first grade in these incredibly formative years, and it continues all the way through college. I mean, this teacher that you're talking about sounds exactly like a college professor. Like, you agree with me or you're going to be ridiculed. Yeah, this is something that starts, whether we're being directly propagandized or not, when we're in the first grade, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you know what they do? I was thinking about this the other day, actually. They make you pledge allegiance. And we don't even know what allegiance means, but they make you do it by the time you're in kindergarten. They make you pledge allegiance to the American flag, regardless of how much you know about our own country or not. They just have you do it. Is that a coincidence, or is it like that on purpose? And even if you don't do it, it's frowned upon. And I don't even think the teachers themselves really sat down and thought about what this pledging of allegiance means. You just do it because it's the right thing to do. You've been told it's the right thing to do. And it's kind of like a nationalistic thing, like pride. And pride's not always a good thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think they've never really sat down and thought, wow, these little kids stand up and pledge allegiance. And think about the word allegiance for a second. Allegiance is a big word. They don't know what that means, but they say it and it sticks in your mind and it stays there. Even if you do it every day and don't even realize, you just stand up and do it. Like I won't say the Pledge of Allegiance because I'm not going to pledge allegiance to something that I don't agree with. And there was a couple times in the beginning of the year where I was into this stuff, but I stood up and pledged, and I didn't even mean to. I knew about all this stuff, but it was just a habit. It was just a habit.
So this still goes, you're still expected day in and day out to say the pledge.
I don't do it. But this is the kind of stuff they do in North Korea. Like, you know, when you're a little kid and they make you stand up and like dance around and sing songs. Like, that's fun when you're a little kid, right?
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff they do in school. I think when I was little, I think the police state in school's gotten a lot worse too since I've been older, because it never used to be the way it was 10 years ago.
Yeah. Just on the Pledge of Allegiance before we move on to that, because that's a huge topic that I've devoted some time to as well. But what's the reaction from people around you for refusing to say the Pledge of Allegiance?
They think it's rude. It's frowned upon. They think that I don't get it. I don't support the troops. So I'm a they think that I'm an uninformed citizen who is disrespectful, and I'm not disrespectful in any way. I don't yell and scream at the teachers. I don't cuss in class. I just sit there, and I won't stand up. And I've been yelled at for it. I've been yelled at, and you know what they said? The teacher told me, if you won't pledge, if you're not going to stand up and put your hand on your heart, you can get out. You can leave. So I said, okay, I'll leave. So I walked out, and then everyone in the class doesn't think about it logically. They just think it's being disrespectful and rude because that's what they've been taught. That's their thoughts are because they've been influenced by something to think that way.
Well, you know, three of the lessons that are pretty persistent all through the schooling experience are obedience, conformity, and apathy. And apathy is a big one, intellectual apathy, that it seems, I remember being younger, like, and thinking this too, it seems like anybody who has a cause is crazy. Right. Like if you care about something, if you're passionate about something that isn't like a sport or some kind of, you know, inconsequential hobby, then something is wrong with you.
Yeah.
You're some kind of extremist. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone thinks I'm crazy. I don't think I'm crazy at all. I think I have some really good viewpoints on things that I like to bring up in school that no one understands. And it's not necessarily, I know that they're not going to understand it when I say it in class, but my goal is to get at least one person out of the 25 people that are there to say, wow, that was a really whacked out thing that she just said. I'm going to go Google it, see what happens. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that would be all that would be required for any thoughtful person with the Pledge of Allegiance. The Pledge of Allegiance was written by a National Socialist. His brother was a flag, or somebody he was close to was a flag salesman. It appeared in America at exactly the same time that the U.S. was becoming more and more imperialist. As the U.S. was kind of like finishing with the Indians, now we're done with them, we've gone to the West Coast, let's take this show on the road kind of thing with their imperialism. And, you know, other countries that had pledges like this or this ritual of allegiance, well, the Philippines did it because they got it from the United States. But the only other country that I can think of is Nazi Germany. And one of the reasons why this became a value for the Nazis, like allegiance was the paramount value in society, because what else could it be? It wasn't peace. It wasn't justice. It wasn't fairness or, you know, any other kind of warm and fuzzy or really true principle that you can base a society around. The highest virtue in society became allegiance. Yeah, I think that the Pledge of Allegiance should be one of the most startling and obvious examples to people of what goes on in school and why it goes on. But unfortunately, it's just missed. So I do want to learn a little bit more. And I've probed kids in these SAT classes just a little bit about, you know, what's going on in your school? You know, are there cops there? Or is this happening? Is that happening? But you said you feel like, you know, you've been there 12 years at this point, that you've seen them turn up the police state stuff a little bit. Can you tell me about that?
Well, there never used to be as many cameras as there are now.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the security stuff that they have is like high grade, high tech. You have to you have to carry your ID card everywhere. Now you have to type in your ID numbers when you walk in the library, when you go in the cafeteria. They have cameras above the bathroom. I'm uncomfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have hall passes, written hall passes, and you can't be gone for more than like 3 minutes. You can't get away with doing anything. You have to, if you want to go to the nurse, if you want to go to the bathroom, if you want to go to your locker, if you want to go to another teacher's classroom to get something, you have to get permission. You have to ask, and they have to know where you are.
Yeah,
it's just I'm uncomfortable with it because I feel like these are just the infancy stages of a bigger police state, because it wasn't like that before school.
Sure. The schools were always about preparing people for citizenship, like how to learn that you're an insignificant part of a large irrational group that needs to be carefully watched and told what to do. Like, that's been consistent for decades. And that goes back to what the original purposes of government compulsory schooling are. But yeah, like, it seems like all the things that are coming in society have been previewed in the schools, like right down to strip searches. zero tolerance, RFID. I know they were talking about like electronically tracking students with these badges that they had to keep with them all the time. There was a school in New York that introduced this idea of having BMI, like some kind of body fat monitors on kids that were overweight. Alex Jones reported the story. It was a true story about these kids got these school laptops that they could take home with them, and they were watching kids through the cameras of the laptops. I don't know if it was intentional, but the laptop was recording through the webcam these kids at home. So, yeah, all of these things are happening. All of these things are very scary. Somebody just brought to my attention that they're going to do a live school shooting drill at Cary Grove High School in Chicago sometime next week, I think. Yeah, my heart goes out to you. It must be very difficult. I mean, school sucks for everybody, but it must be particularly difficult for you to, over the last year or so, to have realized all this stuff and to have been in basically what is a daytime prison.
Well, you know what? Every time it's asked, and it's not just by me, when it's asked, why do we have to consistently have these, have written hall passes for everywhere we go? Why do they have to know? Why do they have to take attendance in every class and make sure the kids are in every class? Why do they have these security cameras above the bathrooms? Why do we have all these new ID cards and new ID numbers? Why? Their response is that it's for our safety. They say that all the time. I mean, they put it they more detailed, in a more detailed way. But initially, it's for our safety, so they know exactly where we are at all times. So that way, if anything bad were to happen, then they would know exactly where we are. And that still contradicts the idea of freedom and liberty, because I mean, those who give up liberty for safety deserve neither, right?
Which Ben Franklin said something like 240 yeah. years ago, right?
Yes.
Well, that weighing of those two options might have been an issue then, but for most people, it's not anymore. And it's really like freedom is such an anomaly in history. And if you look at what has happened, what pretty much started happening from exactly the time the country was founded right up into the present day, freedom is not a priority for people. And we talked about this a little bit before the show. Like, you're in school for 15,000 hours for 12 years of your life where you're asking permission to talk and go to the bathroom. And then add to that all of these things that you're telling me about hall passes and how long you can be out of class. And I heard your other interview with Mike Salvi. Sorry.
Yeah.
Where boys had to sign out toilet paper. I mean, how humiliating and embarrassing. So that's how most people are treated in the most formative years of their lives. And it's not just school. I mean, school is a modern symptom of mistreating children that is centuries old. Before schools, it was factories or farms or churches. Children have always been less than second-class citizens. So when that kind of treatment becomes the norm by the time somebody is an adult, what's freedom? Why does it even matter? Why would it even compare to being safe and secure? Those are much more appealing things to people than the idea of being free and independent.
Well, something that I noticed is that if you mention anything freedom related, like when you ask questions as to why we have all these security cameras and why there's all these ID numbers and why we can only leave for 3 minutes. And if you're even remotely late to class for maybe 30 seconds, you can get a Saturday detention. If you talk about freedom, it's frowned upon. It's frowned upon. They actually encourage you not to think that way, that safety is more important than freedom. And if we don't think that, then we're going to go crazy and we must be doing things that are up to no good.
Have you tried to, in these situations when you're being disciplined for this stuff, have you tried to assert yourself, you know, to say, look, I'm old enough to be in charge?
No, yeah, I have. I've had like personal meetings with my principal. I've actually asked, I've gone to my office to have meetings with my vice principal about their methods of dealing with latenesses and absences. And their responses to me is that they can't change anything, so I have to deal with it. And that makes me feel helpless. And they always try to make it seem like the students can have such a big impact on the school and their own curriculum. But I think that's a total... With the way things are now, I think that's another lie. Like how they tell people that their vote counts.
Yeah. Great preparation for citizenship to be able to pretend that you are a part of, you know, you're an active participant in the system that can make a difference. So has there been, like, when you do this pushback or you speak up for yourself or you assert your, you know, autonomy, have you been given, like, a specific anti-freedom message? Like, don't think like that, it's dangerous kind of thing.
I've been told that I shouldn't worry about these things because I'm a teenager and I need to worry about getting my schoolwork done. Mm-hmm. And by schoolwork means get your propaganda done.
Yeah.
So that's how I take it. It used to make me feel bad because the way they would talk to me is you can tell. I mean, they weren't being necessarily malicious, but you can tell with someone's body language the things that they're thinking. And I don't like that they don't take me seriously because I have posted – I used to print out stuff from InfoWars and try to post them on all of the bulletin boards, like above the water fountains.
Yep.
And people think it's the most ridiculous stuff because I would post stuff about like 9/11 and computer chips and people. And they would take it all down almost a day after. Mm-hmm. And I was called to the office, and they knew it was me because I guess they pulled the tapes. And you know what they said? They said, those bulletin boards are for posting things about important information. And you know what they replaced my InfoWars articles with? Stuff about football and wrestling.
And, you know, what's really ridiculous is to not have questions and to not think about this and to not be curious about, have I gotten the whole story? I mean, it's ridiculous, too, to watch a 9/11 conspiracy video and say, that's settled. I'm done. No more research is needed. I have no questions about what I just saw. And I buy into that. But that's pretty much what people are doing in school as well. So the idea that you want to think about these things and you have this desire to share this information is far from ridiculous. So but of course, I mean, just from my experience of having been in schools, yeah, I know that kind of stuff would be pulled immediately. You know, the most important thing for me about this discussion today was, I know Adam Kokesh reached out to you. I know Mike Salvi reached out to you, and I wanted to do the same because how it must feel to be in that place, to be this pretty much a lone voice. I wanted you to know that there are a lot of people out there, peaceful, rational people who are definitely in your corner. And there's millions more if they just knew who you were that would also be on your side as well. So I hope you keep up what you're doing. I did want to ask about, you know, the YouTube channel. Are you going to continue to try and make these videos? Another one you did was calling recruiters and asking them about foreign policy, which was great.
That has like 2,500 views now, and I posted it like 4 days ago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's insane. See, I need to come up with more videos like that, and I think I'm going on the right path. Before, my other videos are just kind of me talking about certain things, like my opinions about celebrities and stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm coming up with more ideas. I usually, if I come up with a good one, I write it down on a pen and paper. But there's more coming, and I would like more viewers. Mm-hmm. A lot of people did like the video, and that was fun. It was a funny video. It was fun to do, talking to those people. Did you watch it?
Yes, I did. It was funny and frustrating.
Yeah, frustrating is the word. I had to keep my cool. Well, I did, obviously. You can tell I was fine. But afterwards, I was thinking to myself, oh my God, this is real. And it's very much happening as we speak, because I ask recruiters at my school and they don't even know what foreign policy means. And the lady at the end of the video told me that maybe they don't know what it means because my questions are loose, which didn't even make sense. That was scary.
Well, yeah, the questions, I don't know what kind of questions they're typically fielding. I'm thinking the people who answer those phones are like, where is your office? Will you pay for my college? Kinds of questions that are they're not philosophical questions, because all of these things that we're trying to raise awareness about exist because the world is either anti-philosophical or philosophically corrupt, you know? And that's where there is no group of teachers conspiring in your school to dumb down kids. It's just that they were indoctrinated into the same philosophically corrupt system that all of us were, and that so many of us are trying to free ourselves from. So I did want to just mention that I did a podcast maybe like 6 or 7 months ago with a guy named Kevin Soling, who made a documentary called The War on Kids. Have you ever heard of that?
No, but it sounds cool.
Yeah, and it was about a lot of the things that we've discussed today. And one of the things that he suggested to me, he actually drew some criticism for this, but he said, wouldn't it be great if kids just took cameras into school and started posting videos of the kinds of things that were going on there on YouTube? Oh. Because then everybody would know, first of all, what's going on in these schools, what it's really like, and how much worse it's gotten, because a lot of adults don't care. They're like, yeah, I did that 20, 30 years ago. And plus, a lot of people have, you know, a lot at stake emotionally, where they don't want to admit what's going on in the schools because they have to send their kids there for babysitting every day. So, and that also the teachers and the administrators would know that they were being watched, that they couldn't just do whatever they wanted. And this teacher, this is one of the most just outrageous and egregious things that I've seen, where he's actively day in and day out encouraging basically a war where hundreds of thousands of people, innocent people, could die. That's his curriculum. It's really disgusting. And the reason why I said before teachers were kind of in this gray area of they're not, you know, using... They're beneficiaries of force. You know, taxes pay their salary. So what we learn in school is that they're public servants, that they're accountable to the public. But when you you might have seen videos, like maybe Adam has made some, maybe Alex Jones has made some. I don't know if you're familiar with Cop Block.
Yeah, I know Cop Block.
Right. So you see how these people scatter. You know, not to be overly negative, but when the cameras show up and the questions show up, they scatter, even though they're supposed to be servants of the people with the cameras and the questions. So I don't think anybody should have any compunction about going into schools and doing what you're doing. If there's anything that I can do to help you, we've got a pretty decent size audience here. Please let me know, and I would be glad to chip in however I can.
Thank you. That makes me feel so much better, because I felt kind of bad about... I mean, recording what he says and then posting it on YouTube.
Mm.
But I felt like it was necessary because I thought it was wrong. If I thought it was wrong, it was probably wrong.
Well, this is fine in the mainstream media, right? That if somebody is caught on a surveillance camera beating their kid or doing something else, that goes on CNN. And that person could be a private citizen, right? And obviously, you know, that's one of the things that I'm most strongly opposed to is child abuse. But what's the difference here, where he has all of the kids who really, unfortunately, while being capable of thinking for themselves,
yeah,
are not thinking for themselves, and he is feeding them these ideas and also saying, basically, what he told you was, you doing well in my class, senior, who's trying to get into college, depends on you agreeing with me.
Yeah.
Which is also, to me, really, really taking advantage of the position that he is in. By the way, nobody knows who he is. Nobody knows his name. It's fine for them to watch every single thing that you do. But when you turn the camera on them, even while they're being paid with your parents' money, I don't think there's anything here to feel bad about. Oh, man, I'm sorry.
Right.
Just when you said you were feeling better, I'm getting all heated myself. You should. I think the goal of this show is to make people your age and your position feel better. So I'm glad that it did that. Now, I will say this. I'll end with this. The most important thing about freedom is that it's personal. And I think a lot of people get frustrated. A lot of people get burned out. A lot of people feel small and they give up, because when they first learn about these ideas, they tend to run far away from the things they could actually change, which is the personal. And they say, well, I want to end the Fed. I want to get Ron Paul elected president. I want to stop the New World Order. These organizations that are so massive and so far away from where we actually are, from where we actually live, it just leads in people to feeling very powerless. So while you spend the next 5 months in school, I guess you do have to be careful a little bit, because, you know, they're not playing by any rules of justice or fairness or anything like that. So I would caution you. But at the same time, I wish there's more people like you in these places.
Thank you.
So,
hey, now that I think about it, that's true. They have cameras on me or on everyone 24/7. They can see and hear what you do as you walk through the hallways. I never gave them my personal consent that was okay. I'm just used to it. And so is everyone else.
Okay, at this point in our discussion, we had a few technical problems. There's only like another minute left where we say the thank yous and goodbyes. So I will say them now. Sam, thank you very much for coming on the show. If you listen to this in the future, I hope you check out schoolsucksproject.com. I hope you find it to be a valuable resource. And of course, I wish her great success in the future with her outreach and her self-education. Now, I don't want people obviously to walk away thinking that I'm suggesting that this is what goes on in all public school history and civics classrooms, where somebody stands in front of the room and, you know, beats the war drums against Iran. Public school is a place where people who want to push a message like this certainly know that they have a captive and very easily persuadable audience. And it's not just because, yeah, I mean, all these kids, by the time they get to be juniors and seniors in high school, they probably, you know, if they're like most people, incredibly intellectually apathetic, which makes them suggestible to a message like this, especially if it's coming from a alleged authority. But also, what made me particularly angry about this video is that the students are boxed into having to come to some conclusion that involves violence or theft to deal with, again, the alleged problem of a nuclear Iran. And the teacher doesn't even suggest that there is any kind of debate on the issue of whether or not Iran is trying to develop an offensive nuclear weapons program. And your grade depends on you agreeing with him. Pretty much. It doesn't matter if this is your message. School is a place where you can push any personal agenda as a teacher because of the reasons that I've already outlined. So I hope you enjoyed this show. More stuff coming soon. We've got some Sudbury School Talk coming up in the next few days. This Thursday on the live show, Adam Kokesh of Adam versus the Man, after my last two guests credited him as an influence, I figured he and I should maybe do a half an hour together and talk about some of the work that he's been doing. So I hope you'll check us out. 6 p.m. We'll start a pre-show. We'll have Adam on at 6:30. This is Thursday, Eastern Time, schoolsucksproject.com. You go there and click on the tab for live show. You can either submit show prep or check out the live stream and participate in our chat. So I hope you will do that. Last thing before the end of this show today, I want to say thank you to Jason Osborne, my co-host on that live show, who recently made us one of the sponsors of the 2013 New Hampshire Liberty Forum. When you register at the Liberty Forum, you get an ID badge, and they're very cool. And you keep it on yourself with a lanyard. You know what a lanyard is, the strap. So our logo and message will be on the lanyard strap. Now you might be saying, Brett, lanyards? Yeah. Lanyards. I'll tell you what, Silver Circle, that movie, they did it at Porkfest. Everybody noticed it. So Osborne's thinking was, he is a marketing genius. If everybody who is there, everybody who registers, including people like Jeffrey Tucker, Thaddeus Russell, these big names, they see, oh, this must be important. If I ask for them to sit down with us for an interview, I mean, what are they going to do? We're on the fucking lanyard. And here's the other reason why I'm really excited about this. The people who attend Liberty Forum, that is like a super focused marketing target group. Those are people who are active. Those are people who contribute to and participate in and support Liberty-related projects. So to get our name out there like this is a very, very good thing. I mean, I go to these other events and I speak and I do things and I've sold some T-shirts. But being a sponsor, I think, is a different kind of impact. So all of the people that I really want to reach will have the name School Sucks Project around their neck the entire time that they are there. So that's awesome. Thank you so much to Osborne. And thanks to Celestina, who you know is my significant other. She's also the host of Sex, Lies, and Anarchy podcast. She helped me with the graphic design. That's it, everyone. Thank you for listening, and take care. Everybody on.